2025, and that's probably what, in the next 7 years or so. It's going to be mandatory for every citizen to belong to the NHI, and all state medical schemes will be made redundant. But it's unclear how NHI will affect private medical schemes, although it's unlikely, or it is likely, I should say, that smaller schemes are probably going to be phased out. And according to the white paper, NHI is a health financing scheme that's designed to pool funds and actively purchase services with these funds to provide universal access to quality, affordable personal health services for all South Africans based on their needs, irrespective of their ability to pay or their socioeconomic status. Now, this is going to be implemented through the creation of a single fund that is publicly financed and publicly administered. Now, the Board of Healthcare Funders and, of course, the Special Investigative Special Investigations Unit, the SIU, held breakfast this morning to discuss moving from policy to action and how healthcare players can be in alignment going forward. And I'm now joined on the line by someone who would certainly have some intimate knowledge around what role the private sector is going to play in this regard. And that's Dr. Sipho Kabane, who is the registrar at the Council for Medical Schemes. And of course, Dr. Sipho, good evening to you, and thank you so much for joining us this evening on Power Business.
Evening to you, Ayabonga, and your listeners.
Kriga, let's maybe start here. I mean, it's quite clear that certainly when it comes to some of the public sector medical schemes, I think of, one of the more popular ones, which HEMS, as people often say. We hear from certainly the policy wonks within the Department of Health that that's going to be phased out. But it does seem quite unclear what's going to happen to the wide array of medical schemes that exist in the private sector. And of course, as a council that oversees many of these schemes, you would probably have much greater insight around where the conversations are in this regard. Just share with us from an insider's lane what some of those conversations are about.
Well, firstly, let me just show members of GEMS here that their schemes is not going to be immediately phased out. I'm sure you are aware, Ayabonga, that the minister has just taken the Medical Schemes Act bill to cabinet for discussions, and this is going to be dealt with, concurrently with the NHI fund bill. And I think once that is done, this will be published for comments by all key stakeholders, including members of the public.
Yeah. So
the important thing to take here is that the minister wouldn't take a bill to cabinet if the intention was to phase out schemes immediately. Our understanding is that, the implementation of the NHI is going to be phased in, and so schemes, including GEMS here, will be there for some time here. And in fact, if you look at what the white paper policy says around government-funded schemes, it talks of consolidating them here. Rather than getting rid of them.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, the other challenge, Dr. Sipho, has always been around the financing of these two parallel systems. On the one hand, you have the public sector system, which services, a much wider array. But yet, if you compare the resources, or a much wider audience of people, I should say, but if you compare the resources that are dedicated to the public sector and vis-a-vis those that are mobilized by the private sector through the medical schemes from private individuals, many have argued that the resources tend to be quite similar, and yet, of course, the burden of care is disproportionately larger in the public sector. Surely you would agree that this is a good system of cross-subsidizing access to care and ensuring that, what is a national issue, the issue of having a healthy population, should be something that's publicly managed, financed, and publicly administered.
Yes, that's true here, because at the heart of the universal health coverage, as typified by the National Health Insurance, is basically addressing the larger socio-economic issues that the country is faced with here. And these are, poverty, inequity, as well as bad health outcomes. And until, there's a movement at a national level to get everybody to support the social solidarity that universal health coverage as typified by NHI, actually seeks to achieve, where the rich subsidize the poor, the healthy subsidize the sick, and the young subsidize the old. We will continue to have these bad health outcomes, both in the public and the private sector because of these inequities in terms of funding and service provision that exists.
Now, Kikha, the other issue here certainly is around the escalating costs of the provision of healthcare services. We had a conversation last week with the Minister, Minister Dr. Motsoaledi, and one of the issues that he raised was that, you know, the medical schemes are unable to deal with some of these escalating costs that are coming from, in particular, some of the private healthcare groups, and be it the hospitals or even some of the specialist practitioners in the medical space. And of course, they end up passing that on to the consumer. What would your perspective be as the council, certainly, that oversees some of these medical schemes? And what do you think is needed to ensure that we rationalize some of these costs? I mean, one of the figures that was bandied about was 7,000 Rand a head when it comes to you know, the charge for a circumcision. And certainly that got Dr. Motsoaledi certainly quite riled up and quite hot and bothered under the collar there.
Yeah, listen, you know, in making a business case for universal health coverage or the NHI, one of the things that were identified as problematic here was the runaway costs here in that come from the private sector here. From the Council of Medical Schemes perspective, we do analysis of all the claims that are made against schemes. And, you know, the pie graph clearly shows here that the major, you know, recipient of the claims against the scheme members is basically hospitals, the pharmaceuticals through medicines, and the specialist groups. And that a small portion of this goes to, you know, general practitioners and other key service providers. The health market inquiry, we are still waiting for recommendations that are going to come out of that, because we were part of the proceedings and we have listened to, you know, different stakeholders making presentations there, including a paper that was presented by, you know, the WHO, which clearly, you know, demonstrated that the costs of certain procedures, you know, that are done at hospital level were higher when compared South Africa to OECD countries. And obviously that's a cause for concern here.
What accounts for that? I mean, one would think, of course, that, you know, South Africa, you know, we're not a middle income or even an upper income country. And yet when we're compared to OECD countries, which are some of the richest countries in the world, our private healthcare costs continue to even outstrip those ones. I mean, how does the industry rationalize that? What explanation do they give?
Well, our understanding is that basically there are several factors that influence, you know, the increase in costs in the public sector, part of which is basically the tariffs, you know, that hospitals and other people, you know, including specialists, charge. But we also know that it has been estimated that fraud, waste and abuse contributes up to 15% of the total amounts claimed. And when you look at the total amounts claimed in 2016-17, they were to the tune of about 160 billion. So you're looking at close to 20 billions of rands that are going to, into fraud, waste and abuse. And that is why we, as the protectors of members of schemes here, want to start playing an active role in the prevention of fraud, waste and abuse. And we're trying to set up partnerships with different players, including the SIU, BHF, as well as other regulators such as the Health Professional Council of South Africa and others, to bring down this fraud, waste and abuse.
Dr. Sibuli, I've got a layer of fraud and how that would play itself out. I mean, between all the players in the chain and how that would map itself out. But I'm not too sure I understand the waste and abuse. I mean, in the medical environment, when we talk about waste and abuse, certainly in the medical schemes and that relationship between the medical schemes and, of course, the private healthcare service providers, well, what is it that we're actually referring to?
You know, waste and abuse basically means, we're referring to incidents, for an example, where a person has got, a patient that has got an upper respiratory infection or the common flu, is actually given high doses, you know, of antibiotics when they are actually not indicated. You know, and this is done in order to claim and get some money out of the medication that is given.
Okay.
And then you also get people getting multiple, you know, investigations, as well as hospital admissions that are unnecessary. And we just believe if we sit as key stakeholders and develop, you know, common protocols and guidelines around how to eliminate this, it can make a huge difference.
Let me ask the last of my questions, Dr. Sipho, from the perspective of a consumer. Many of the consumers who would be listening to this conversation that we're having now would be members of medical schemes themselves, and certainly some of the messaging around this national health insurance has probably been mixed, if I can use that word. But from that perspective, What would the NHI mean for me if I'm a member of a medical scheme at this point in time in 2018? We do know it's going to be only really be implemented in 2025, but where we're sitting now, what would that mean, and what would be different in terms of the provision of the service?
Well, what it would mean, Nia, is that as a member, you'd be guaranteed to, you know, to receive a certain service benefit. You know, that is clearly defined by the law at that time, and basically assures you that irrespective of your income and your status in society, you'll be able to get that quality of care. And that people will be given care in line with their needs more than, you know, based on their ability to afford, which is currently the case. Currently, people that are able to access healthcare are those that are high-income earners, and those that are poor do not get proper access to care. And as we know, because of the inequities between private and public, where private has got all the resources, including service providers, specialists, etc., so most of the people flock there that have got the funding. And the state is left without doctors, nurses, and other service providers, resulting in long queues, you know, poor access, and overall poor health quality. So if you belong to the NHI, irrespective of who you are in society, you'll at least be entitled to a specific level of quality that the country can produce given its resources at the time. And we think with universal health coverage, would be able to reduce, you know, inequities and improve the overall health outcomes of the country. So things like life expectancy would even improve much more than they have improved at this point.
Okay. And thank you so much for joining us this evening.